Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, this is the EFL Freezer Crowd podcast, where we take a light-hearted look at all things Football League.
You scumbaggy maggot, Matt Smith, Troy Parrott.
I'm James, lifelong COF fan, and I'm joined each week by self-proclaimed Statman Luke and resident Millwall fan Andy.
Gary Monk sacked after a 0-0 draw with Millwall as well, although most clubs in the Football League would die for a result like that.
We'll be covering important news, a run through the games, and our all-important goal of the week.
Yes. 3-0 to the own goal.
So find us with a new episode each Monday on Spotify and Apple Podcasts.
You're listening to Acton Millwall, broadcasting from the beautiful South Burnley. Accept no substitute.
Well, hello, dear listeners. Welcome to Achtung Millwall, the real Millwall fan show, the show for real wall. And the most real wall of the lot is joining me on the show today. It's Mr. Mike Hayden. Welcome to the show, Mike.
Hello, Nick. Hello, listeners. Good to be here.
Is it me, Michael, or is there the faint smell of optimism abroad in South Bermondsey at the moment? We've had two decent performances on Saturday at Boreham Wood and then last night away at Bournemouth, two good shows, a good point. Yep. I thought last night. Am I overplaying it? Am I being too, too rosy tinted in my expectations? Is there optimism about for you?
I think we've seen an improvement and a clear improvement, wholeheartedly, probably in creating chances, which is something we found it pretty difficult. Whether we're still putting them away is another question, which perhaps we'll get onto. But yeah, I think we've improved, although, you know, I don't think you can really overanalyze the result against Boreham Wood. I mean, you would expect a team, even if they were bottom of the Championship with no wins, for example, to go there and win comfortably against the conference side. So I'm trying to sort of set that result aside from any, I suppose, thoughts on it. But yeah, I think we were really good last night, and I think we're starting to improve. But until we get some more wins on the board, I'm cautiously optimistic, put it that way, Nick.
Yeah, I mean, the win is the thing, and you're right to yeah. Back that up as a cautious kind of note. And performances don't count in the league table, of course. It is a results driven business, as the cliche has it. I suppose it's just two games where, as I said on Saturday at Boreham Wood, we weren't awful, and that's been a step forwards lately because we've had a few performances that have been very under par. So that didn't happen Saturday, and I thought last night to go to Bournemouth, who are, I think they were third in the table, yeah, as we went there last night, and to take the game to them, Mike, I thought was really hopeful because, you know, it's just one point, and I think everyone's got to be realistic about that. But that's a big step forwards in terms of attitude to the game.
And I think the upturn in performance is alongside Zahor being fit again. Yeah. And he really has kind of risen the performances, and the team looks slightly different. So you can see that maybe with an additional one or two players, if we can lift the team further, hopefully we can kind of get out of this mess of a form that we're in at the moment. So fingers crossed we can do that. But yeah, it was excellent. I was a bit concerned, I think, for the first 20 minutes when Bournemouth had a lot of the ball, you know, which you would you'd expect them to do, and they looked quite dangerous. And I was worried that it was going to be a long evening, but actually after that sort of 20 minutes, we really got on top all of a sudden. And obviously with the Jed Wallace one-on-one, and I thought we were much the better side in the first half overall. And, you know, I put on Twitter last night, you know, very pleased with the point, but it wouldn't have been undeserved to have got three last night, which I think if you look at, as we mentioned, the league table and a side that Bournemouth are no mugs. I mean, you know, I know they've been relegated from the Premier League last season, but they kept most of their Premier League squad together, actually. I think they only lost, I think Ryan Fraser left and someone else, Callum Wilson as well. He went to Newcastle, didn't he? But they've kept a lot of that side together. So that is really a Premier League squad. So to go there and play the way we did, you know, we looked like a team that actually had a few wins on the bounce rather than, you know, the form that we know we've had. So, it was impressive. And hopefully we see more of it.
They played an open style. I mean, I thought they looked very dangerous early on. I'm with you. In fact, they were their two main chances came fairly early on in the game, in the third minute. And then the 11th minute, I've got two situations noted here as good chances for Bournemouth. But apart from those two chances, right up until maybe the last minutes of the game, we largely kept them out. And I thought that was a real tribute to that Millwall 11, because, you know, listening to the TV commentary, you know, and even online, a lot of people were predicting a tough evening for us. But, and you know, initially, yes, you're right, there was that kind of flurry of attacking intent by Bournemouth, and they do have quality players. There's no, you know, there's no dodging that. We'll come back to that question in a moment. But I thought we did very, very well to close them down and to start to work chances of ourselves. It's probably a side that suited us in some ways, Mike, because we had the chance to counter attack.
Well, that's right. I mean, you know, we know that we do struggle on the creative front, and the only way we seem to be able to do that is if we just get a bit of space in the final third. And, you know, the way Bournemouth played with pushing players forward, that allowed a bit more space for us to attack into, and we were a bit more dangerous. The only other game I can think was when we lost at Blackburn, where Blackburn played a very bit of a gung-ho style and pushed a lot of men up, which actually left them quite exposed at the back. And we were able to, although we lost that, but, you know, able to score, and were very unlucky to lose that match. And it was sort of similar, I thought, with Bournemouth's performance. You know, we tend to struggle against these teams that just want to get a point against us and sit men behind the ball, because as we've, you know, done to death, we don't necessarily have the creative output that we really need. But teams that, you know, come at us a bit and actually, you know, try and push men forward, it does play into our hands a bit. And I think it did last night.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the starting 11 was probably pretty much, apart from maybe Danny McNamara coming in for Marlon Romeo, that's probably the main talking point, really.
Surprised. Yeah. I mean, he was excellent against Boreham Wood, but as I previously said, you know, I think you need to take a shred of cautiousness when kind of really analysing that performance, just because you're playing such a kind of low side. But yeah, I mean, I fully expected Romeo to start. So it was a very bold move by Rowett, but one that paid off, I think, Nick. I mean, he was excellent.
I thought he looked, I mean, I posted on Twitter, I thought he looked born to the Championship. I mean, where has he been? And you know, I suppose he's been in St Johnstone in Scotland, which I think is in Perth. So that's where he's been. But I thought he really looked comfortable. I mean, given that's his starting debut in at Championship level for the Lions, I thought he looked really accomplished and you know, real competition for Marlon, Mike.
It is. I mean, he looked a player who'd played 100 Championship games.
Absolutely.
And I mean, that's, you know, credit to the lad, because I genuinely didn't expect that at all. So he's clearly come on leaps and bounds at that loan spell at St Johnstone. And it's about time Romeo had a bit of competition. Obviously, I think only got James Brown there, who I don't think's fancied. I'm not sure he has much of a future at the Den. And then, you know, Billy Mitchell's sort of filled in there, but he's been injured, but is also more of a central midfield player. So it is good. And it will give Romeo a bit of a kick up the backside, because I think McNamara, what he did display last night was he is competent going forward and defending, and he's very composed on the ball as well. Whereas you see with Marlon sometimes is he's a lot better going forward and sometimes quite erratic. So you've got two different types of players there that could really work well for us. My only thing was, I was sort of, I don't know if there's a cynic in me, Nick, but is Romeo going out the door this January?
No, there's these, you know, These whispers circulate, don't they?
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me. The the kind of aftermath of the booing of the derby, which I don't want to get into particularly, but I think Marlon did take a stand that was contrary to the vibes that you picked up online, rightly or wrongly. Take your pick. And I think that maybe there was. I don't know. Would there be an echo from that, Mike? I don't know. I don't know if I'm overthinking it a little bit.
I mean, that was one of the reasons why I thought potentially, because I think post-match derby, and yeah, we won't go into it, but he did obviously make some comments and so forth. But also, the fact that this sort of recalling McNamara has come a bit out of the blue as well, and the fact he started last night, it sort of adds up to think maybe, Romeo's kind of thinking about a move. I mean, pure speculation, I must add.
Oh, absolutely. Based on nothing,
Exactly. But, I mean, based on absolute guesswork. But, the three things do point to that as a possible outcome. But, who knows? But, I mean, sorry to deflect from Danny's performance, because, I think even, if you sell Romeo for a few million quid and McNamara steps in, like a duck to water, then it's a win-win situation for the Lions.
Well, especially if James Brown goes to St Johnston and improves. I mean, clearly the experience of playing up there. I think it's Callum Davidson who is the manager up there in Scotland.
Yeah.
And if James goes there, because I thought when we've seen James in the past, he looked like a prospect, but he seems to have stuttered a little bit. So maybe going there could send him back down south an improved player. So that would allow possibly Marlon to make the move away. I don't know. I mean, listeners have to think of this show really not as any kind of authoritative podcast or any kind of like two serious voices. It's more like my nan and maybe your nan too, once upon a time, like nattering over the back garden fence in many respects.
It is. It is. Yeah, it's absolutely complete gossip and
speculation.
Non-founded, no evidence at all. But that's what we like to do, don't we?
But I think you could be onto something there. I don't know. The aftermath of all that may have left a taste in the mouth for Marlon, and maybe from the club's point of view, who knows? I don't know. It wouldn't surprise me. Let's leave it at that, I think.
Yeah.
I want to pick out Scott Malone as well last night, because I thought he looked very, very effective on that left side. And he's a player that kind of goes in fits and starts, really, Scott, doesn't he? But I thought it was one of his better games last night, as indeed Ryan Leonard in midfield, for that matter.
Yeah, agreed. I think Malone's blown a bit hot and cold for us, I think, in this loan spell. I mean, there's been some games that he's looked, very good, where he's, dangerous going forward. He's got a lot of pace as well, which I think some people don't always realise. And he's kind of a gifted footballer in a way. It's not like having Tony Craig or Murray Wallace at left back. He can play a bit, Malone.
No.
He's looked dangerous. Agreed. And we'd just like to see more of it, really. I think following Murray Wallace's absolute disaster against Coventry, I would find it difficult for Rowett to pick him again at left back, certainly for a period of time. I mean, he wasn't in the squad last night. I'm not sure what happened there, because I think he's fair enough. Yeah, so maybe that was why. But I mean, I think it'd be difficult for Rowett to pick Wallace on following that performance for a period. So Malone needs to make this position his own now. And I think if his contract's up at Derby in the summer, he clearly likes playing for Millwall. This is his second spell at the club, and I would see him wanting to stay, but he'll only stay if he puts in these consistent performances. Ryan Leonard, your point, I think, has been really consistent. I mean, he's just a solid operator, I think. He doesn't necessarily do anything kind of outstanding, but you need a player like that sometimes who can kind of steady the ship and knows what he's doing as a central midfield player. So I'm a big fan of Ryan Leonard. I think he's a decent player to have trying to run that midfield.
It was great to see a midfielder put some solid tackles in and then run with the ball. It makes these surging runs from midfield, doesn't
he? He does.
And there's not few things in football that are more exhilarating than a good solid tackle in midfield and then a surging run forwards. And Ryan Leonard can do that. So more power to his elbow. I thought he did well last night.
Yeah.
And Woods, the perennial boo boy, I thought did okay for me last night. I mean, he had one of his better games. Where do you stand on the Ryan Woods debate, Mike?
So I thought he was okay last night. I mean, I didn't notice him a lot, which I don't know if that's a good performance from Woods, because you're always thinking, oh, fucking Woods has given it away again, or he's tripped over the ball or something. But I didn't actually see that last night, so he must have played okay. My view on him, and I've got to be careful what I say, listeners, because I'll get a slap from Mr. Harry Warren at some point if I kind of compliment Woods. There's a player in there, Nick. There is a player. I think
he's got
something. And I'm sorry to the chap who was on Sunday, can't remember his name, but he mentioned when he saw Ryan Woods play for Shrewsbury against Millwall. And I was at that game, and Woods ran their midfield. There was conversations happening with the fans, like, who's this ginger guy? Yeah. He'd be a good signing. And then all a few years later, we've actually got him and are obviously criticising him. But I think he's got a lot of ability, but we're either not using him in the right way, whether he should play a little bit further forward rather than kind of sitting in just pinging balls, or simply we just don't have the attacking players who are going to try and create space for Woods to try and, you know, play these Perlow-esque passes, which is probably true. So I think he's a good player, but he just doesn't seem to fit in at the moment.
So
I think Rowett's got a big decision, because I assume, Nick, he's out of contract at Stoke in the summer. And I know
you'd have thought so, wouldn't you? Yeah.
I mean, 2 years on loan. He's been on probably a big contract, but I would have thought he's probably thinking he's not going to get that anywhere else again. But, you know, is Rowett playing him a lot because he's thinking he wants to sign Woods permanently? And then is he going to bring players in who are going to kind of complement Woods's game? Is again, my nattering over the garden fence analogy from it. So trying to overanalyze probably. But is he trying to build a side round Woods? Because there must be a reason, Nick, why he consistently picks him. Because if he started dropping him, Woods will go, well, I don't want to sign. So I don't know. Again, this is what I kind of think about all day.
I think you're on the mark. I mean, there is a player in there. No one can deny. I mean, there are moments when he picks a pass, and I think it was Saturday against Boreham Wood. And you know, as we keep saying, we know it's only Boreham Wood. But it was the most beautiful pass forwards. I think it was into the run of Kenneth Zohor, I believe. Yep. I'd have to recheck the video. I haven't looked at it since. And there was a pass last night he made where you think, wow, that's quality. That's the next level. And then, you know, all the criticisms of him fading away, as you said there, you didn't notice him. I didn't notice an awful lot about him last night, apart from maybe one or two moments, which is not enough for somebody with, you know, that's looking to really influence a game. But it's clearly talent in there. Gary Rowett knows that, and maybe... we'll come onto the front line in a moment, but maybe with players that can make these pockets of space and run into the channel and all these kind of cliche terms, maybe with a better quality up front, maybe that's where Ryan Woods will come to the fore. I don't know. Because I looked at that front line at the start of last night and I thought, actually, that's not a bad, really not a bad front line. I mean, if Troy Parrott reaches his potential, and I think the boy's struggling a little bit at the moment, he's possibly trying too hard. Kenneth Zohor looks quality, but he's not our player. He could go back to West Bromwich Albion on the next train out of Euston. And Jed Wallace, we know about, you know, and Jed missed an absolute screamer in the, was it the first half, Mike, when he went one-on-one?
Nightmare that,
heartbreaking miss. But we know that Jed can do things in Millwall terms. You know, you have to put that caveat in there that others can't do. So that's actually not a bad front line by any, if all of those players are playing to their maximum.
Yeah, I think on paper we've actually got a pretty decent side, and agree with the front three certainly. I mean, you know, Jed and Zohor are both good championship players, so in the upper echelons of the championship as well. And then, you know, we've so got the so-called wonder kid who we've not seen much wonder from, but maybe that's still to come. But yeah, you're right. If you look at it on paper, that should be a dangerous front three. But apart from Jed, not a lot of pace. I mean, Parrott's not that quick.
No, he's not.
You don't see him get on his bike much. I mean, Mason Bennett, on the other hand, has got, you know, can press the accelerator, can't he, and kind of get down there. But I don't know, Parrott doesn't seem to do that. And I think he feels more of a centre forward, Parrott. I'm not sure on the left side is necessarily his strongest no. area. And especially as Carl Bates actually mentioned it a couple of times last night, he never shoots on his left foot. I think there was one chance which he could have probably got a shot away on the left, tried to cut back on his right and then lost the ball, Parrott. So I don't know if the left side is his strongest area, but yeah, it's an interesting debate.
I mean, I'd like to see whoever at the club takes a role in Troy Parrott's life to sit down and see what's needed, because clearly there's a boy with a lot of talent there. No one could have seen those videos at the start of the season said that you know, anything other than that's a prospect. He's come to the Den to try and impress Mourinho, to try and get back into the Spurs reckoning. I'm not sure he's doing enough at the moment to warrant even a moment's thought by Jose, to be blunt. So he does need to do something, and I hope he can do it, because he's a major, major talent if we can get the best out of him for these next crucial few months, you know.
Yeah. Again, it might be, yeah, we will. I mean, it might be, I mean, talking about Ryan Woods and our style of play not suiting him, that could well be the case with Troy Parrott as well. You know, I could see him, because he's, I mean, I think people need to basically stop comparing him to Harry Kane, because we can see now what completely different players they are. You know, Kane would, you know, leave his studs in on someone, and he was a bit hustly-bustly, which worked wonders under Jacket and our direct style. Whereas Parrott is just this, you know, what if you were to describe your kind of like 18-year-old striker at a Premier League youth setup, you know, someone who's skillful, like, you know, he looks the part, but, you know, he's not necessarily gonna, you know, really kind of like dig in. And so I think, I don't know, I'm not sure whether maybe he fits. Perhaps if he went to a bit more of a, I don't know, a bit more of a footballing side, and no disrespect to Millwall, of course, but, you know, if you think of, trying to think of a footballing side now, I mean, like Blackburn, for example, when we played them, they really played some nice stuff. I mean, so where you can ping balls around a little bit more, perhaps that's a more suitable style, because, again, it just doesn't look like it's working. But, you know, still plenty of time left, I guess, Nick, in the season to see.
Achtung, Millwall.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet Plush Care, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
I mean, it remains a problem. I just noted here that coming into the game last night, Bournemouth had scored 37 goals to our 18 goals. I mean, that's the problem, isn't it? I mean, yeah. I know it's state the bleeding obvious, Nick, but that's the problem. And unfortunately, no matter how much promise there is in that Parrott, Zohor, Wallace front line, we've got to start getting the ball into the net. I mean, Jed's one-on-one, which should have been scored. I know many, they can be missed, put it that way. But one-on-one in that situation, the advantage rests with the striker. The goalkeeper's got to react to whatever you do. The fact that Jed didn't get that speaks loudly about why Jed's still at Millwall in many respects.
Yeah.
That's harsh, isn't it, to say that? But it's true.
That's not a bad place to be, is it?
No, well, I've been there for 44 years.
Yeah. You've hung around there. It's good enough for you. It's good enough for you. It's good enough for Jed Wallace. Let's put it that way. I know. I think, again, Jed's been a bit hot and cold, but we know that he suffers a bit from burnout, I think, doesn't he? And he, you know, he plays pretty much 90 minutes every game for us, doesn't he? I think he was taken off a few minutes from the end last night. And, you know, I just think maybe he's suffering a bit there. It was a disappointing miss. I think he had a long time to think about it. But also when you're coming up against Asimir Begovic, who's a veteran goalkeeper and played, you know, hundreds of games at a higher level than this. I mean, he read him so easily. A player with more confidence probably would have taken it round him or dinked it over him. But, you know, he tries to put it through his legs and Begovic has, you know, read him like a book. So, you know, that was disappointing.
There's a line in Tony Cascarino's biography, which I read years ago, where he compares himself with Teddy Sheringham. And Cascarino always suffered with the syndrome that he called the little voice in his head that says, you're going to miss, you're going to miss, you're going to miss. And by contrast, he said that Teddy had ice cold water running through his veins. He didn't have the little voice and Cass did. And I think maybe the little voice got to Jed a bit last night. I think we've all got a touch of the little voice in this. I know I do, listeners. And so I think you have to be compassionate in these situations. And what better place to come to than Millwall for compassion when you've just missed a 1-1? I mean, it was a night for what I've called here Millwall spirit. I think Gary Rowett, Mike, in his post-match comments referred to questions being raised about the Millwall spirit, the spine of the team. I think we've probably said a few things on this show, querying whether these players really do want it. And, you know, I mean, listening to the pre-match build-up, you'd have thought it was AC Milan we were going to last night, not Bournemouth. But, you know, they're a decent side. And I thought we showed enough to answer that question. I thought that this group did you know, stick it to their critics.
Yeah, and it would have been really easy to get rolled over 4-0, and I don't think anyone would have probably been surprised, I think. But I look back at this awful run of games, and the really two games where we've been absolutely shite is Middlesbrough and Coventry. But actually, in a lot of the other games, although we've not necessarily created chances, we've competed, you know, we've been in the game, we've showed some effort, but we've just not necessarily got the points. So it's one of those kind of strange runs where it's like you're not completely awful, but you're still not picking up points. But that could have got, it starts to get in your head, doesn't it? So I think credit to the character of the side to, you know, because they could have gone there and easily got rolled over last night. But, you know, something in them has said, you know, we're gonna dig in and try and get some points from this game. And they did. Credit to the team, because it mentally, as I say, it must be difficult to go to a team that's probably expected to finish in the top two. And when you've been on a horrendous run of form, to play that well and, you know, get something out of the game. So, yeah, well done to the team.
I want to mention two disparate subjects here. One is the impact of COVID on the squad, because I think those two performances you mentioned there, which are very poor, Coventry was coming back after the COVID break.
Yep.
And I think Borough wasn't quite the lead into it, but it was certainly not far short of it. I mean, I by burying myself in a kind of a nuclear bunker, I've managed to avoid this plague that's affected so many people this year. So far, touch wood. A lot of people I know have had it. And a lot of people who I respect have said how debilitating it can be, not for everyone, but for some people, it can be quite an extreme experience. And I know that Gary Rowett's had it, because one of my notes to myself as I was watching his post-match interview was how he seems to have lost weight in his face. He looks quite gaunt to me. I don't know if you noticed that, or if I'm again gossiping over the back garden fence again, Mike, but I thought he looked like a lost, you know, as my old nan would say, he lost a bit of weight in your face. You should be eating your meat pudding. It's an unknowable, but I can't believe that an outbreak of COVID, knowing how severe it can be, couldn't have impacted on the squad and affected some of these poorer performances. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think it'd be, I mean, although they are, you know, obviously in the less vulnerable category, you know, being, you know, typically between 20 and 30 years old and obviously fit and healthy, but yeah, there's still a chance that, you know, they could suffer some symptoms and stuff and you don't know what that would be. But also, you know, again, looking at the mental side to think about COVID and so forth, you would be worried about it. And family, the impact of maybe spreading it on. So, you know, there's no doubt that that's obviously had a severe impact on maybe the way we've been playing and recently as well since this outbreak that we had. So it's a season like no other, and I think this is maybe why, like, also I'm cutting a bit of slack as well, I think, in regards to a lot of criticism, because it's just such a strange time. And, you know, it'd be easy to say just like sack Rowett, for example, which I just
think that's the
farcical comment, but you know what I mean. But I think we just need to cut them a bit of slack. Like, I know it's the same for everyone else, but it can affect teams differently. So, you know, I don't know what else to say on it, really, Nick. You know,
the Rowett question is a good one, because, you know, clearly form in the end dictates the manager's fate, and that's whether there's a pandemic on or none at all. But it does seem not to take into account the peculiar circumstances of the season. I mean, he's been affected with it himself. The same kinds of things that would go through all of our heads. You know, you don't want to pass it on to your nearest and dearest, the vulnerables in your own family, all that kind of stuff, and that will go for the players affected. So I'm not making excuses, because I don't believe in them, but there must be an impact of that event. And the other thing I just want to say, is a completely a point, nothing to do with COVID at all, but I'm just picking up on Matt Smith, who was the impact substitute of substitutes last night, wasn't he? Poor old Matt Smith, Mike, because he doesn't feature in the starting lineup at the moment, and no one can probably see a starting position for him, but then he does come on and get goals, doesn't he? I mean, it's a very Millwall dilemma.
He saved us on several. I mean, I think I kind of obviously celebrated the goal last night, but I kind of chuckled to myself as well when it seemed to crawl in. Smith's got on the end of it again. But fair play to him, because, I mean, sitting on the bench, he must be thinking the same sort of question that you've just said. I mean, what more can I do to get in the side? You know, he is actually, we had this debate before, but, you know, a leading goal scorer last season. You know, in a team that's struggling to score goals, he does seem to get a few, you know, and that's... That's the kind of debate that we have to have. It is. But I don't know. He just, he does, obviously, we talked about this, but he doesn't really fit in with, I guess, the style of play. But he works as an impact sub, and he did last night. But I like Matt Smith. But I just think as well, if you've got Kenneth Zahor, who's, you know, a bit more of a mobile target man, I'm guessing it would either be Smith or Zahor, typically, wouldn't it, if you were to do a like-for-like swap, when I think most of us would choose Zahor at the moment.
Smithy is slow. I think I'd probably give him I'd give him a race if I was that is saying something.
Yeah. I mean, him and so I think Smith and Pierce would be running with the goalkeepers at the back. I think those two, blimey.
Oh, there was one wonderful moment. I'm talking about lack of pace. I think it was the second half. Pierce got caught for pace. I think it was almost like watching a statue with like a nippy little kid running past you, you know, running around the other side. There was a moment in the second half where one of their players just beat him for pace.
Well, the goal as well, because it looked like he was just walking in treacle or something. It was like he's buried his boots in the grass. It was just so easy to knock it past him. But, you know, what do you expect from an ageing centre-half, unfortunately? But Harry actually made a good point last night. I mean, maybe we should be trying to look at a ball playing centre back, because
Bobby Moore.
If we can,
he's fast.
Just no West Ham connections though, Nick. I'm not keen on that. But you know, if we're playing three at the back, we're actually a bit light at centre half as well, because Hutch gets injured, which he's been known to, you know, a little bit light.
We're stuck. Just to put the others, to be fair, for, you know, we've prosecuted Alex Pierce, but on the other side, in the case of the defence, he made a tremendous block in the first half, I believe. Although it may have been the second half. Anyway, it was a shot on goal, and he put his body on the line to block it.
I mean, he's good at that.
Courage.
Raw
courage.
Yeah, I mean, he reminds me again, to mention Tony Craig for the second time, very limited footballer, but will put his body in the line, but can get skinned, you know, kind of peeled like a banana almost. He's kind of like that. But I mean, I like him because he's clearly a good leader. You know, he's key in the dressing room. But, you know, at the end of the day, are you going to get in the playoffs with Alex Pearce as one of your centre-halves? Probably not.
Probably not.
So yeah, that answers that probably.
You might, just to close us out, you might get into the playoffs with Jason Malombe. And as I've listed it here, listeners, end of a teenage romance. Unfortunately, the yep. Jason Malombe romance is over, Mike. He's gone to Preston. He's dumped us.
I know. How could you, Jason?
He's unfriended us. He's deleted us from his phone. Yes. And in he went now. That's the end of that. I mean, we are clearly short of quality. He was quality. It's gone now, so there's no point in yearning for what you can't have. But I think this window, which has been fairly quiet. I mean, I know we had this club record bid for Jason and that got nixed, but you know, nothing much seems to be happening at the moment. I don't know whether that's naivety on my side to expect anything. It is Millwall, so maybe nothing happens till 5 p.m. on deadline day. I don't know. But
No, I've not heard a ton of rumours either. I mean, no. I think we were a bit overambitious actually bidding for Malumbi. I mean, you know, we know that Brighton see him as a bit of a long-term, long-term plan for their central midfield. God knows what the record, what's our, is it 1.1 million? So we probably bid 1.2 million to break the record. just get that over so that the press can say Millwall break the record. But there's no way, I don't know if it was to show ambition, but the club must have known there's no way they were probably going to sell him permanently.
Not for Millwall prices, no. Not unless you come with some serious money, but we're not going to come in with serious money.
But your point on the transfer front, not heard a lot either myself. I heard a murmuring about, God, I've forgotten his blimmin' name.
Well, we've got one here. I'm just looking at the news. Yeah. No, the London News Online, sorry. The Motherwell's Alan Campbell, 22, is on our shortlist. So there we are. We can claim to be in the know, can't we? We're the show that's in the know, listeners.
Some crap from Scotland. Brilliant.
Well, I know nothing of the boy, so let's keep an open mind on that. So that bye-bye, Jason. We loved you, but, you know, you didn't love us. The FA Cup, Mike, just to close us, I know we've mentioned COVID. We've mentioned Tony Craig twice. I'm going to mention the third time now in the context of the Tony Craig show. The FA Cup, it's a cup competition that's suffered its slings and arrows of misfortune in recent years. And this season it's being played to COVID rules, so that all the ties are one-offs, you know, played with extra time and penalty shootout. I thought, actually, I quite enjoyed watching that third round, and it was quite, there was some images on the Monday night game with West Ham in the pouring rain up there in Stockport in the mud. It was like this Battle of the Somme, you know, the mud bath and rain on the edge of a giant killing until they got a late goal. This is wonderful stuff. I'm wondering whether this COVID-inspired rule change might have put some more spice back into the old lady again. I mean, I quite enjoyed it. I don't know how you found the FA Cup third round.
Yeah, I thought it was fantastic. And I kind of probably, like you, was a little bit unsure because, especially, you know, these little clubs like Chorley, for example, having fans in the ground, though, let's go back to that, but would have been, you know, is an incredible occasion and to win the ground.
Marine.
Win the game. Yeah. You know, we know what that's like. You know, the games that we've had at the Den beating these Premier League sides in the last few years, it's magic. And it's something, you know, you remember for the rest of your life. You know, it was the Everton game, you know, it's an I was there moment, really. So that I was kind of concerned about, because I was thinking, well, is it going to be as magic? But actually, these teams still didn't roll over. I mean, you mentioned Stockport, West Ham got lucky there. And
Crawley.
Crawley. I mean, who'd have seen that coming? I mean, I thought Craig was going to be turned inside out. But he was excellent. And I bet he loved beating Leeds, Craig. But it was magical. And it Yeah, I think the thing is, when you know the FA Cup, it makes you smile, doesn't it, when you see these little minnows beating some of the big boys. And I think maybe that's the underdog mentality of being a Millwall fan as well, Nick. But I love it.
I agree.
Yes, thoroughly enjoyed it. It's still special to me, the FA Cup, that's for sure.
Lions drew Bristol City in the next round, the fourth round, which would be at the end of this month. And then they did the fifth round of one after the other, which is unusual. But again, so, you know, times being what they are.
Yeah.
And we have the chance of Sheffield United or Plymouth. I mean, these are all low-key ties. And as somebody rightly replied back to my snarky tweet in the week, we don't really need glamour clubs because there's no one there to see them. There can be no Leicester City at homes or Everton because we can't have any fans. So we may as well try and sneak a route through in a classic style of 2004, you know.
And I think I'd have been so disappointed if we'd have, you know, drawn your Manchester United at home and not been able to go as well, Nick. Yeah. I'd have been devastated. Gutted. So actually quite a dry couple of draws. We'll probably get knocked out to Sheffield United if we beat Bristol City anyway. Is sort of like, yeah, not the worst thing that could happen, I guess. And also just because of this COVID break and stuff, you know, we're catching up with games. We've got enough bloody games as well.
Well, this is
so,
it.
You know, I think seeing as our four league form has been so bad, I think it's not the year for a cup run for Millwall.
No, Saturday's fixture, I think, is away at Nottingham Forest. A fixture that is evocative in the memory, because that was the last time that there were, you know, a full stadium watching a Millwall side. So again, another important game. I mean, it'd be nice to go up there and play like we did last night and, you know, hopefully get a result. Mike, you fancy us up there?
Well, yeah, I mean, if we play Matt Smith, get another hat trick, maybe that'd be nice. I mean, they're another side who they've not performed to expectations.
No, they haven't
at all. We didn't play them very long ago. It was a draw, wasn't it? 1-1 at home.
It was at the Den, wasn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, and I thought they were pretty average there. So yeah, I mean, if we can carry the thing is, I mean, we just have to keep playing like we did against Bournemouth. You know, there's no excuse. We've seen what the team can do against a really top side. They need to take that character forward, you know, all of the attitude that they've shown and the quality as well, and really start to just be consistent and just getting some points on the board. I mean, I had a look, I think we're 7 points off the bottom three, which actually kind of frightened me slightly because, you know, if we continue, we may slip further down. So yeah, it's got to a point now where we know we can perform well, but we've just got to get some bloody points on the table. And hopefully this weekend we can take 3 points home from the City Ground.
Make a start there at Forest. Yeah. Nicely done. Well done, Michael. Thank you for coming on the show.
Thanks,
Sunday's show will be with Mr. Harry Warren, the master of controversy himself, appearing on the show for next Sunday. Until then, dear listeners, huge thank you to Mike. Thank you for listening, and it's arrivederci from me and arrivederci from Mike. Bye for now.
Thank you very much.
Hello.
Yeah, hi, this is Dane from Australia. Just thoughts on last night's game. I thought, the last two games have been very promising. Obviously, change of formation, change of lineups, having Pierce back. Just as a leadership makes a huge difference, I think. Not probably the highest quality player, probably not up to this, to the level of the championship, but we kind of need him as that disciplinarian, just to organise the back line again and, get a bit of leadership, a bit of a voice in there. McNamara looked really good from what I did see. And having Zahor up front was just, hopefully we can keep him. He's different quality. You can see why West Brom rate him so highly and value him. Yeah, in the millions. And that's the difference. We need a quality striker up there. And just having Smith to come off the bench in the last 20 minutes was really good too. Just to, get that goal at the end. He's always been a goal scorer wherever he's gone and whenever he plays. But overall, last two performances have been much better. Hopefully we can keep pushing forward. Playing more direct now. I think Rout realises that we can't play his passing game, as you've stated many a time, Nick. you know, I don't know about Woods. He just doesn't. He has his moments, but it's just not consistent enough, and that's probably why is that where he is. It's just his good games are really good, but his bad games are league two level. He's just not no consistency, and half the time he doesn't do much with the ball except pass it sideways or backwards, and just makes us a bit slower. But you know. It's all about the positives. Getting a point against Bournemouth, high quality team, is a good start and a good platform to build on.
Thank you for listening to Aston Millwall. If you enjoyed the show, please head over to Apple Podcasts and leave us a cheeky little review. A river to Aston Millwall. Till next time.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.